Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Church on the Ridge podcast. This is David Wall. Thanks for tuning in to listen to this week's talk. This week is really a unique and kind of special one as it's the first in our temporary meeting space. That's right. Last week, we packed up and loaded out everything from our meeting areas downstairs, moved it upstairs to our new temporary meeting space for the next few months. This is all a part of our journey to our new permanent facility. Our pastor, Charlie, will speak a lot more to that today in his talk, but this meant moving everything, including our tech gear. So we hope to have a new video system up and running in the coming weeks. Until then, enjoy this audio recording. You can still follow along with the talk notes by using the talk guide feature in the COTR mobile app. We hope you'll fill out your connection card in the app and let us know how we can be praying for you this week. Enjoy this weekend's talk.
Welcome to Kids Church and Youth Church. If you're on this side, you're a youth. If you're on this side, you're an elementary age student. Welcome. Hey, you know, how cool was that video? Got some great news for you today. The Halloween extravaganza experience, Jeff and his team, you guys were off the hook. It was absolutely amazing, man. I was out there. Really, really cool. I was on Douglas Street, and I'm walking through there, right? And God gave us some weather. You know, he is capable of giving us some weather, no matter how much my doubting. But it was phenomenal that night, and we had some challenges again with the building this week, and Cornerstone came in at over $700,000. Let me tell you the exact amount: $700,454.22. I want to tell whoever gave that 22 cents, thank you. God bless you. That means you're getting probably your children involved and being a part of it. It's really cool. And so I'm excited. I'm like, so excited. I got the word. I'm like, wow, that is fantastic. But then there's this little thing that hits you. Does anybody remember what the goal is? Oh, you guys all remember. Yeah, it's 750. So I'm like, God, we're $700,000. We're $50,000 short, or $49,600, whatever. We're that much, right? I'm like, we're short. And I go, you know, what's going on? And a lot of, if you understand this term, we've talked about it a little bit here, but spiritual warfare, there's a lot of battling going on, inner stuff, and stuff just we're fighting with and trying to figure out. And so we're like, short, man, God, don't you want this building built? And I'm going to need some tape, guys. I'm sorry, Jack, if you could bring me up a little tape, that would be great. Struggle with that. So all week long, kind of back and forth, God is great, amazing. Man, what's going on? And then I walk out on Douglas Street, and I look across the street to Curtis, right there at that intersection, and Halloween night. And I had to stop and take a picture. God bless you, brother. Thank you. I had to take a picture. Does that look all right? Had to take a picture, and it was kind of a nighttime picture, so and I took it because, and then I counted the people from my camera, There were 7,000. I don't know how many there were, but there, I'm not being hyperbolic, there were thousands. That just, the sea of people was just unbelievable. And I look at that, and everywhere I turn, I could see Church on the Ridge, Church on the Ridge, Church on the Ridge, a.k.a. Jesus, Jesus. And here's what I saw. I saw it in the picture. I saw it walking around, and maybe you saw it too. But people walking around with their cups like this, not quite like this. And some of them weren't walking. They were already staggering a bit. And it's a night to be with your kids. It's a night for family. It's a night just to have fun. And so many of our adults and our families in this community couldn't even have a night just to hang with their kids without having to get a little encouragement, you know. And by the time the night was over, you know, that bottle was drained. And I looked and I said, wow, there's going to come a point in time when that person is going to recognize that his value, his worth does not come, and that bottle's going to be empty, and he's going to be looking for something that gives real life and real hope and real encouragement and real meaning to his existence. And the desire is, and the impact is that we make, is that when they see that sign, Church on the Ridge, they go, hey, maybe there's something bigger than what's in this cup. Maybe there's something bigger than my house. Maybe there's something bigger than my paycheck. Maybe there's something bigger. And they stagger through these doors, sometimes kicking and screaming, but at least they show up. And I looked and I saw the impact that this church can make upon this community, upon this valley, because there were hundreds of cars that were coming and parking from around. I don't know if you know this, but USA Today said that Snoqualmie was the number one place to trick-or-treat in the state of Washington. Way to go, Church on the Ridge. It would not have happened without the influence. Jeff and his team and you guys and this church and your gifts and the whole thing. So here's my point. There's absolutely no question in my mind, in my heart, that God spoke to us when he told us to build this permanent facility. That without a church, where else are they going to turn? Where else are they going to turn? Oh, maybe it's another wife. Maybe it's another husband. Maybe it's a... And God has allowed us to be here. And so as I'm walking through there and I'm seeing all these people and I'm going, God, this church is your idea. It's your thing. My cell phone buzzes. And I know it's awful, but I'm tied to it, and I love it. And it's a new Galaxy Note 10 Plus, and it's got a little thing that you can draw on it and stuff, and this is so cool. And so I pull it out of my pocket, and my wife goes, seriously? We can't just walk out here and be together and just enjoy without you having to look on your phone? Does your spouse ever tell you that? I go, I know, but it buzzed. It buzzed. And I look at my phone, and it's an email from a family in the church that said, hey, I'm so excited about the email. We sent out an email saying that we got over $700,000. I'm so excited about that. It's just great, man. I love our church. I love what God is doing. And our, my family and I, we want to make up the difference. And I'm in the sea of people that need Jesus, and I get an email. You make up the difference. Yesterday morning, I get a text. Hey, we're so excited about what's going on. We're so excited. We're so excited. We decided to up our commitment. And with that commitment and the others that have come in, it has put us over $800,000. And I cannot tell you how much that is so necessary for this facility, because as we're going along, we're just looking at, you know, we're just everything's expensive, you know, and I was going, okay, even with the 750, you know, we may not be able to have carpet, we may not be able to have paint, we may not be able to have doors, we may not be able, and you guys are laughing, I'm being serious, and we're going through that, and I'm going, okay, God, and he's going, Charlie, will you relax? This thing called fear hits us, this fear, and fear is a terrible thing. John 15:9 says this, as the Father has loved me, this is Jesus talking. He's talking about a father that he knows really, really well. As the Father has loved me, guys. That's a lot of love. Can you imagine the Father in heaven talking about his Son, Christ, and saying, as the Father has loved me, that amount of love, the immensity of the universe, the God of the universe has loved his Son with the perfect, matchless, unbelievable love. And he says, as he has loved me, guys, I love you. What are you looking for someplace else when you... My love, the love of the Father transfer, loves you. Now just hang out in my love. Stay plugged into my love. You know, I can feel it. I don't know if you can, but I can feel it when I'm plugged in. Wow, you guys are really close. It's kind of the spitting zone right here. Thank you, George. George helped us get into this space and got our permits through the city, and we got our TRO, it's a temporary occupancy. No, temporary restraining order. I don't know, whatever that is. temporary occupancy, T-O-P. Anyway, you guys are close. Praise God. I know what it, I can feel it when I'm plugged in. You can feel it. You feel this, wow, I'm connected to Christ. I feel his love. And like things just happen. You go, man, I can do this. And then, you know what else? I can feel it when I'm not plugged in. Those things that before seemed easy, those things that before that seemed like, man, I can conquer this. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, man, this is like, oh, pushing through mud. This is just rough. This is awful. And the circumstances don't change. It's something that changes out of me. I'm plugged in. I'm not plugged in. I've likened this whole thing to being plugged in like a vacuum cleaner, and you get the cord way out there, and there's one more little piece of fuzz out there, and you're like, you can't reach, and you, ooh. you lose power. And I thought about that. And I said, you know, that's not really the picture that Jesus gave. And last week we talked about it. He talked about a branch that's been cut off and that branch doesn't die immediately. And I thought about this thing that I'm so attached to and tethered to. And when I leave the home and I pull out the little cord, you know what it says at the top, and it makes me smile. It says 100%. I got full charge, man. This is great. But then just minutes later, it's like 98. Whoa. Am I going to make it throughout the day? What do I have to do? There is actually, I don't know if you know, there's actually a phobia, a new phobia out there called nomophobia. Nomophobia. It's the fear of a low battery. It grips 9 out of 10 people, so don't be laughing at me, because survey says. Questionable behavior happens when your battery falls below 20%. Listen to some of this stuff that takes place. Anxiety exhibited, asking a total stranger to charge their phone. Arguing with your significant other because of unanswered calls or texts. Ordering something at a bar or restaurant just so that you can be near a power outlet. Secretly, without telling them, borrowing somebody else's charger. Owning 3 or more cables, so you're never far away. Low anxiety, nomophobia can lead to unhealthy choices when it comes to choosing between hitting the gym or charging your phone. 1 of 3 people are likely to skip the gym. But millennials tend to have it worse, with 42%, almost half, likely to skip the gym when choosing between working out or charging their phone. Phone users will even drop everything, 30%, and make a U-turn to head back home to charge their phone. Nomophobia can cause breakups. Chances are nomophobia is ruining relationships. A loved one believed was ghosting you could simply be exhibiting classic symptoms, as 60% of those surveyed reported that they have blamed a dead phone for not speaking to a family member, friend, coworker, significant other. Yeah, my phone was dead. Actually, what it was they didn't want to use the rest of their battery talking to you. Like, hey, I only got 15% left. I'll talk to you later. I think we need a new phobia. No-God-o-phobia. No-God-o-phobia. When you move away from God, this fear should grip you that you're in a place when you start feeling these symptoms of anxiety, just a general sense of anxiety that, man, there's no one to turn to. There's no way out of this. It ought to scare you and say, whoa. No gotophobia. Now, some of you cannot see the screen. I apologize. If you'll come out and help this week, we'll hang some new ones, but it takes like 4 guys to do it. And so if you could help this week, we're going to hang one over here and one over here, and then we're going to hang the projectors and we got to hang these speakers, and we got to. Anyway, you can't see it, but that's what it says. No gotophobia. Sense of anxiety. Trying to do everything on your own, in your own strength, with little spiritual power. It ought to scare us and go, whoa, I am unplugged. I am disconnected. When I stay plugged in, guess what? It reads 100%. And I want to keep it at 100%. I want to keep it so white hot and charged up with Christ that no matter what comes against me, you know what's amazing? God and I can accomplish anything, mainly God. But He and I together are a majority. Alone, I don't know how much battery I got left. I come to church on Sunday, get 100%, and then if I disconnect, and what do you think, by Sunday afternoon? Tuesday, some of you are at 0. And you're having to go on your own strength. Fear. Here's what gets us unplugged? What gets us unplugged? Fear. Psalm 3. It's in your notes there. You won't be able to read it on the screen because I'm in the way. But Psalm 3. It says, a psalm of David when he fled from his son Absalom. Absalom was the number one son, his firstborn. He was supposed to be king. David chose his other son. Absalom revolted, and things went to pot quickly. And David is praying his fear. He's going, I know where to take my fear. I'm going to pray it. And he writes this prayer, and it's really cool that he wrote it down so the rest of us could hear how he talked to God. He starts off by talking to God. Lord, I recognize you are Lord. That's a good place to start. God, I'm not. Lord, I got a lot of enemies. How many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying to me, God will not deliver him. But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high. I call out to the Lord and he answers me from the holy mountain. I lie down and I sleep and I wake again. Wouldn't that be cool if you could lie down and go to sleep? And actually sleep and not be restless all night because you're anxious and you're worried and you're waking up at 4 a.m. and 2 a.m. and go, oh, why can't I sleep? And oh, I got these pressures. David says, man, I can lie down and go to sleep. And I wake up in the morning. Why? Because I'm plugged in. He sustains me. I will not fear though 10,000 assail me on every side. Arise, Lord. Deliver me. My God, strike all my enemies on the jaw and break the teeth of the wicked. I love that prayer. God, slap them hard. Cold cock them, whatever it takes. Bust their jaw, God. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. Fear. Greatest temptation that you face, the greatest temptation I face, is fear. It pushes you to these other things, porn and alcohol and illicit relationships and you name it. It pushes you, fear, fear, fear. Oh, I'm not going to enjoy, I'm not going to have, it's not going to be there. I need a jolt, I need a lift, I need a little drug, I need something because, whoa, with my life the way it is, it's not going to work. Fear. Lord, how many are my foes? How many problems are you facing today? David's mounting up. You get one, it seems to escalate. How many? You couldn't even count them all. I got so many problems. How many fears do you have? How do you face them all at once? And then there's this voice inside your head and this voice that's coming at you from the other side saying, and God won't deliver you. God won't take care of you. Come on. And David had a reason to think this. He had a reason to believe this because, you know what? He can hearken back to the time of Saul, the king that was before him. And the Bible says that God took the kingdom from Saul. He ripped it from his hands. Saul rose up in his arrogance, said, hey, I'm God. I'm the king. I'm the one in charge. And he said, I don't have to listen to what God says. I'm going to do what I say. And God says, oh, well, let me explain something to you. And he took the kingdom from his hands. And now the people are saying, David, you're just like Saul. Look at your past. Look at what you've done. And immediately David can remember, oh yeah, I took that other guy's wife. And then I had him murdered. And it was bad. Bye-bye, Ellie. And it was bad. Stairwell doesn't help, does it? Let's talk about two kinds of fear. There's a healthy fear and there's an unhealthy fear. A good fear and a bad fear. A healthy fear and unhealthy fear. Healthy fear. Rilo May wrote a book back in the 50s about fear. It's still available today. It's incredible, talking about fear and anxiety and worry and the difference between the two. And he likens fear, healthy fear. If I'm walking through the new building site, right, and the guys are trying to put up the beams, and I look up, and one of them slips, and it's like going to fall right on top of my head. Now that I know why they make you wear hard hats when you go over there, right? This beam is coming. This is a big dude. And all of a sudden, your automatic nervous, whatever that nervous system is, kicks into gear, and you get adrenaline rushing through you, and you look at the beam, and you kind of, in a millisecond, you determine the speed of the beam, that's when it's going to hit you, and you look in both directions, you figure out which way can I jump to get out of the way of this beam, and you make that leap, and you make that jump, and whoo, whoo, and your heart is beating like crazy, and it's just going crazy. That is a healthy fear. Two things about a healthy fear. It's specific. And it's actionable or constructive. It pushes you to something. It pushes you to react in an appropriate way. Unhealthy fear. You've had that experience with the beam, and then you kind of walk away from that, and now the rest of the day and the rest of the week, you can't go into a building. What if these beams fall? What's going to happen to me? You know, I came this close to death. What if I'm supposed to die right now? What if my time is up and that was just an aberration? I was really supposed to die there. Maybe I'm going to die right now. Hey, my boss, you know, he didn't smile at me when I came in. And now what if he doesn't like me? What if he's thinking I'm, you know, and all throughout the day you're going, this is a fear. This is what Rollo May calls an unhealthy fear. It brings drear, it brings dread, can we doubt. And you start doubting everything. And you notice what about it, it's not specific and it's not actionable, it's not constructive. You don't have any place really to hook. You don't have any place really to go with it except this sense of drear that's over you. It's like here in the Pacific Northwest when it's, you know, 32 and a half degrees and it's always raining, just drizzling. It won't snow, right? It's just day after day. And day after day, you got this. And what happens is it's an attack on your person. It's an attack on your being. It's an attack on yourself. You are not good enough. You're not strong enough. You're not a man enough, woman enough. You are not enough. And that drear just kind of hits you, and you're worried about it, and it's an unhealthy fear. And when you get healthy fear, that adrenaline shoots through you, and you react, and man, it's amazing. When Stephen was a little boy, we used to put him in a high chair, and he was like everywhere all at the same time. He was like God. He's just everywhere. He would not stop. He was just like, kid, slow down. No, and he'd run, and he'd run over here, and he had bruises all over him. We look like abusive parents, right? And he's just all messed up. He's running. We put him in a high chair, and we strap him down and tied him bowling knots so he couldn't, you know, get away. And I don't know what kind of knots they were, but we tie him in knots. The kid would stand up. There's a time. He is standing up in his high chair. I don't know how he got out of this thing, and he's ready to do a gainer right onto the top floor. And mom sees it, and I don't know what she did. She was like Captain Marvel. She was, whoa, and slow, right? Catches the kid. I'd have let him drop. Said, hey, that's what he learns. Great lessons. Gravity, you know. But no, and how did you do that? How did she do that? Fear. Put it into action. And it's a jolt and it hits you. You cannot live in that fear all the time. When you're constantly in this place of unhealthy fear and all that stuff is trying to shoot through you, it is killing you. You don't want to know why people get ulcers and colitis. And I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Health issues. Your body cannot stay at that revved up state. And it manifests in places that you don't appreciate. It's an unhealthy fear. And David comes along and he says, hey, when you have that fear, there is actionable something you can do with it. There's something you can do with it. And he says, get plugged in, because Christ protects, he guides, he gives value and hope. I've talked to you about the big buts of the Bible. Here's another one. But you, O Lord. Oh, these people are against me. I can't count my enemies. People are telling me that God will not help me. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me. My glory, the one who lifts my head. A shield about me. He protects and he guides. In the Bible, there are two kinds of shields. The kind of shield that a guy wears on his arm, a little round thing like this, and a guy will bring his sword down and begin to slash, and you'll lift up that sword, and then you'll throw a blow back, and you'll lift the sword, and you throw a blow back, little sword. That's not the kind of sword the Hebrews are talking about here. The kind of sword they're talking about is one that's the size of a door. And you put that thing in your arm, and sometimes it takes two hands to hold it. And the only time you use this sword is not in hand-to-hand combat. It's too big. It's too unwieldy. There's no way you're going to move this thing around. The only time you use this kind of shield is when you're attacking a fortress, a stronghold, and you're following your general into the attack. And as long as your eyes are on the general and your shield is in place, you are safe. You follow where the general leads, but look where the general is leading you. He's leading you into danger, into attack. You know what they do from those fortresses? They pour hot lava. They drop giant boulders on you. They throw arrows at you. The slings and arrows are outrageous for they're coming at you. And the general is leading you there, and you have this fear inside of you, and the temptation is to turn around and run. What happens when you turn around? You've just exposed yourself completely. Moving forward, you have the protection of the shield. Running away from your commander, your general, the one in charge, you're dead. For the Christian, for the believer, for the one who says, Jesus, you're my king, my captain, there is no option. No matter what the slings and arrows look like, I will follow you. You're my shield. And then he goes on, he says, you're my glory. Why does he say you're my glory? Because he used to be his own glory. I'm the king. I can have whatever woman I want. I can snap my fingers and have somebody killed. I've got a big army. I'm the strongest in the land. I'll have Joash count my army. Against God's command, I have esteem. When I walk the streets, people say, there's the king. Well, where is he at now? He's in the desert, running from his own son. His palace is gone, his army is gone, his esteem is gone. And he says, I can't lift my head anymore. Everything I use to lift my head is now empty. Now you're my glory. Now you're my glory. And you're the one who lifts my head. And let me finish with this, because we're going to do something we don't normally do on a weekend. In just a few moments, we're going to receive communion. And we're going to pray into our fears. And David says, the one who lifts my head. You know that kid who fumbled the football, 1 yard line? You know that quarterback who threw the interception and it was a pick six? You know that lineman who let the guy through and the quarterback is sacked in the last minutes? And he's coming off the field. And the coach grabs him and says, come here, you look me in the eye right now. Hey, you're my player. That was a mistake, but you're my player. Lift up your head. And all of a sudden, something goes through that young man. He says, oh, my coach is for me. He just lifted up my head. Some of you this morning need Jesus to grab you by the scruff and say, hey, look at me. You're mine. You're mine. Lift up your head. And look what David prays. He says, okay, God, if you're my guide, my protection, my hope, my confidence, then bust him in the face. Get him, God. I want you to sing this song with the band. And then Pastor Kevin's going to come, and he's going to help us pray through our fears this morning before we receive communion.